Hey everybody, this is Mike with the Mountain Weekly News. Welcome back to episode number 21, wow, of everything snowboarding and more. Thanks for tuning in this week. First up, we are going to look at Grand Targhee Resort is now 100% open. They opened on Friday, November 17th. Oh my goodness, Grand Targhee was absolutely epic that day. Just want to give a shout out to Targhee. They are one of our sponsors this year on the website, and just an incredible place to ride. Right now, they've got 5 of 5 lifts open, 97 runs. Holy cow. So far, Targhee's received 120 inches of snow this year. It's so sick up there. They've got a 52-inch base, really, really fun for ripping around, no lines, friendly employees, and I'm actually looking at their webcam right now, and people are just having such a good time there. Again, there's still no lines, and it's a powder day. Anyway, Grand Targhee Resort, 100% open. Just want to give a big shout-out to one of our sponsors. Well, it's of no surprise that Targhee's going off. You know, we've been talking about this La Nina winter for a while, and, you know, speaking of La Nina, another place that's pretty epic every year, but especially on La Nina winters is Mount Baker. We've got one of our riders up there, Cody. He actually lived here in Jackson for quite a few years, spent time in Colorado, and has been in Mount Baker for the past couple seasons. So we wanted to get an update on how Mount Baker's riding and the couple snowboarders that are actually lost. They went missing outside of the Mount Baker ski area, and we'll let Cody give the update on that.
You guys got the most snow in the country so far. How's the mountain riding?
I mean, like it's mid-December into December, and it's not even Thanksgiving. You know, opening day was anybody that was here got it, and there's not very many words you can really put it in. And I mean, yesterday as well. Today's kind of been the first day that started breaking up, and you know, you're finding some more tracks and stuff, but there's still plenty of good snow out there. And I mean, tomorrow they're calling for another 15, so won't hear very many complaints from up here.
Wow, how many inches of snow are you thinking you're going to get this year? What's the magic number you're looking for?
Oh, I've been calling for the past 8 years for over 1,000-inch season, so I'm going for probably 1,100. See if we can't get close or break that record.
Sick. Well, when it starts getting that way, I'll be sure to come out and visit you guys.
You know you always got a place.
Right on, dude. Tell us, there's a couple snowboarders missing up in Mount Baker, Drew and Jake. I know you know those guys. Kind of tell us what you're hearing about those guys right now.
So, you know, last Sunday, they went splitboarding up out a table. Unfortunately, they really haven't let anybody know exactly the plan on where they're going to hit. So it's kind of been hard to locate kind of the area where they're at. That being said, you know, we've had the Whatcom County Sheriff's Office up here. You know, the search and rescue, plenty of volunteers on snowmobiles, snowshoes, skins, you know, not to mention Jake and Drew's family and friends that, you know, everybody's just trying to coordinate and trying to figure out, you know, just where these boys are at and trying to get them home to their folks, you know. Yesterday, they tried getting a heli in, which I believe they used for eco purposes, but I think with the passing snow, you know, we didn't really have too many clear spots to get the heli in the air. So I think they kind of pulled the plug on that and, you know, resumed searching on foot. They did some beacon searches up on table, as well as some probes. But, at this point, it's, you know, skeptical outlook, but everybody's praying that, you know, they can return home safely.
And you were saying that you guys have another storm coming, and obviously with Baker, as we talked earlier, that, I mean, you got the clouds, and, I mean, there's always weather, so even just getting a heli or a drone, I mean, that you just can't do that all the time.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, heavy winds, heavy snowfall, I mean, it makes it even more dangerous for, you know, the people in the search and rescue and in helis to really get out there and do the full rescue efforts. Everybody wants to, but, you know, then you're more or less just endangering more people. And unfortunately, that's what happened earlier in the week with the initial snowfall before opening day was a high avi danger. I mean, a lot of snowfall in a short amount of time, that first 24 hours, putting searchers out there, like, it's more dangerous than anything.
Yeah, that's got to be tough for, you know, a tough balance for search and rescue and people like that, where it's like, you know, you want to get out there and do your job and help people, but at the same time, you can't put more people, their lives at risk or in injury, stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody up here is a professional when it comes to that kind of stuff. You have to be. And so I remember last season in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, there was a search and rescue that they had gotten called out, and then, you know, it was dark was starting to creep in, and then avalanche happened, and then one of the search and rescuers ended up breaking his leg, and it was just like, all right, well, now it's a combined effort to get, you know, this search and rescue guy out safely as well as find the people that are lost. And it's just, you know, trying to find that balance of not just kind of adding to the situation, you know, and just trying to get out there and do your job and, you know, help everybody return home safely.
Any gear that you're seeing standing out at Baker a lot of people are using this year?
I mean, the go-to Gore-Tex, as usual. As far as, like, boards go, I've been seeing a lot of Capita, what is it, the Spring Break series, Capita Spring Break lineups. You know, your Jones, pretty much just the Palace Slashers, the Jones Flagships, the Jones Hovercrafts, your directional Nitro Slash, the go-tos. It's nice because we got to open that up on opening day, so not too much groomer riding.
Heck, dude. Well, we look forward to getting you some boards and some gear to test this year, and just stoked that you picked up and left Jackson a couple years ago, and now you're in Baker, and looks like you're going to get another fucking epic year, dude. You're stoked.
Yeah, man. I mean, they're calling for La Nina again. So far, so good. Keep the fingers crossed there, Mike.
Kill it, dude. Well, right on, Cody. I appreciate the update, and be safe out there. And thanks again for kind of mentioning, you know, to have sort of a plan and to leave that with people, because I think that, you know, if we all did that, it would definitely help out the search and rescue efforts moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, that's we're all just out here to have fun, and, you know, we go to places that necessarily aren't safe, and so just kind of letting at least someone know the general area, instead of just kind of winging it, that could have changed everything in this search. But, you know, just leaving plenty of prayers to family and friends and all the rescuers out there that can return these boys safely.
Sorry, yeah, we're sending those vibes as well. Right on, Cody. Thanks again, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right, sounds good, Mike. Have a good one.
All right.
All right, well, that's what's going on up at Mount Baker. It was really nice to have Cody call in on the line there. Obviously, yeah, you know, it's a heavy time up at Mount Baker. You know, Cody's friends with those guys, and obviously the ski season just kicked off. They're going to have this amazing ski season. There's also going to be this kind of dark cloud hanging over most people. The hard part is that bodies probably won't get found until the spring. And if it's a really big La Nina winter, that could be even late summer by the time all that snow melts off. So vibes to everybody up there. Speaking of snow, oh my goodness, Eagle Pass helicopter skiing is opening December 1st. Eagle Pass is located up in Revelstoke, BC. Eagle Pass is founded by Scott Newsom. Scott was the first Canadian mountain guide to get certified on a split board, first or second. I know Craig Kelly was going toward that, but Scott is in a class of his own. So anyway, Scott has opened a heli ski company up in Revelstoke, Eagle Pass Heli. What's rad about Eagle Pass is they have 390,000 acres of terrain to play with. That's a lot of snow. Scotty's a split boarder. He's a snowboarder. They're going to take you to rad terrain. And I looked up kind of the pricing that they have. They've got this three-day heli pricing package. It's $3,297 Canadian, which ends up being $2,500 US. So you're looking at $850 a day to go heli skiing up in Revelstoke, stay in a nice built lodge. It's actually a newly built lodge they just opened this year. Go out with Scotty, go out with his crew, shred Big Pow. Travis Rice has used that area recently, all sorts of people. It is epic. It's kind of like Haynes. That's actually where I met Scotty for the first time. So if he has left Haynes and guiding there and he's guiding in British Columbia, you should probably check out that outfit. another rad place to get pow, Togedy Mountain Lodge. Togedy, oh my goodness, they're opening December 1st as well. Togedy, there's a ton of split boarders going up there right now, a ton of skiers. It's snowmobile heaven. There's, I just looked at the webcam for Togedy and there was like 15 trailers and snowmobiles in their parking lot and the place isn't even open yet. So tons of snow up there. I think the snow tell for Togedy at 9,500 feet is reading about 48 inches right now. It feels like it's much deeper in spots, but we are off to a great winter pretty much everywhere. Again, as we said, from Jackson North is just killing it. Next up, we've got, let's see, next up we're going to do an interview that I did with Olympic gold medal skier and Olympic silver medalist, Tommy Moe. So, Tordilla Mountain Lodge, you guys are offering heli biking. Tell me, what is heli biking?
We have snow bikes that we can take out in the backcountry up there. And there's a lot of areas where you can go and ride along these ridges. And there's a bunch of river bottoms, so you can ride on the ridges, which are kind of like really nice gravel, you know, easy terrain, kind of moderate. And then there's really nice river bottoms, and you can actually bike on some of the glaciers down to the cove, where it's kind of gravelly and just all different experiences on there.
And what sort of experience level does somebody need to have to come fat biking with you guys?
I think it's not imperative that they're expert mountain bikers, but a little bit of bike experience is great. I mean, the mountain bikes that we have are fat bikes, so tires are super wide, they're super stable, and in comparison, it's really similar to like fat skis, so you kind of have a little wider ride, you can go along the rocks really easy, and I think we can accommodate. We haven't really guided a lot of guests yet in the backcountry biking, but we have some routes that we've actually identified, and we're going to start, we've been kind of making a big media splash with the heli biking, so I think we got our foot in the door, and it's only going to get better as we go out and find new runs and new terrain.
So how on earth are you guys able to get the bikes into the helicopter basket?
There's a company, I think, in Canada that makes this aero bike rack, it's called. So you can put actually six bikes on each side of the helicopter. So there's three on one side and three on the other. And they're actually like a basket for a heli-ski trip. It's basically just like a, you know, open and closed, pretty large basket. You can put five pair of skis in. So right now you can put three on each side. And on a trip like this, let's say for a mountain bike group, if you had a family, you could put, you know, one child in the front with me, let's say I'm guiding the trip, and then four adults in the back. So you could have six bikes on the machine, and it's the same setup as heli skiing where you fly up to the ridge top, you know, you stop, unload the bikes, and then the helicopter, you know, picks a spot down at the bottom of the mountain and you bike down to him. It's pretty cool. I think, you know, I haven't personally done a lot of it myself, but I think it's a great avenue for us because our wilderness lodge is 65 miles from Anchorage. It's out in the wilderness, and we have skiing trips, rafting trips, fishing trips with rafts, paddleboarding, kayaking, water skiing, wakeboarding, and mountain biking. It really adds a nice facet to our lodge, and we're just trying to do stuff that's a little more adventurous and have open itineraries for the guests.
So you've got the heli biking, obviously, Tordillo up in AK, you've got great skiing. What about the fishing? I keep hearing really good stuff about fishing up there.
Oh, yeah, the fishing is really good. Mike and I, Overcast and I, started guiding out there in 1997, actually, at another lodge. And we identified the fishing as being world-class right away because we were on a rafting trip. And like, oh, there's a lot of fish here. And so we started the Kings and Corn trip, which was a trip where you go skiing in the morning and then you come back in the afternoon and then you take the raft down the river. Same deal, you put it in the basket of the helicopter, fly down with the gear, and you get out and you go salmon fishing. You can catch, like, 20-pound salmon, 30-pound salmon, 40-pound salmon. I've even caught a few 50-pounders that are kings. They come in June, and then July is sockeye, and there's some pink salmon. So there's all five species of Pacific salmon come into the river that's near our place. And the Tlalchilitna River is 65 miles from the ocean. So those salmon are swimming all the way back up to where they spawned. And a lot of times we catch them and let them go, and sometimes you can keep a few if you like to have a barbecue at night.
Wow, the fishing sounds sick. What brought you here to Jackson?
Jackson Hole. It's a kind of a long story, but I moved to Jackson in 1994. I came here as a junior racer. I grew up skiing in Montana, and came to Jackson for some junior races in 1983, I think it was. And one of my friend's dads was a ski patrolman at Teton Village, so we came down early and I went out there and skied with him, and we skied everything in the Hobacks, Corbett's Couloir, and all sorts of terrain, you know, Alpha Chutes, and I was just like, wow, this place is awesome. And kind of fell in love with it as a young kid, and then after the Olympics in 94, you know, I had great success in Lillehammer. I won the downhill and then got a silver in Super G, and I was talking to a few resorts as becoming an ambassador. I was talking to a few resorts in Montana and Colorado and Wyoming, and I came up here to Jackson and talked to the ski area, and they were like, yeah, we'd love to have you, and it just took a little while to figure out some accommodations, and then sure enough, they called me back in, I think it was July, and we got a place for you to live, and love to have you come up, and then I moved up here. And at first, I just wanted to see if I liked the community and the town and the ski area, and so I lived over in the Aspens for 4 years, and then I ended up buying some land in 1998 over in Wilson, luckily enough, and built a house in 2002, and love it here. It's great. I got a couple of kids now. They're two daughters. They're in fourth and second grade. The accessibility is what I really like, is being able to go to the river if I want, or go up Teton Pass, or go up to the ski area, or go over snow king with my kids. And there's just all sorts of nice opportunities for outdoors.
How did your life change after the Lillehammer Olympics, before and after?
That's a good question. You know, I've always been in the ski business. You know, a lot of times athletes, you know, after their ski careers kind of have a hard time figuring out what to do next. And for me, it was pretty simple. I was always in the outdoors, you know, kayaking and fishing and rafting and skiing. And a friend and I started the Torridula Mountain Lodge, and kind of right at the tail end of my ski career, at least we started doing the Kings and Corn trip, and then we found this Wilderness Lodge in 2004 and purchased it. And I've always been, you know, in the mountains or on the rivers, so I was just like, I'm pretty much going to have to step into the guide world here and start, you know, being in the service industry, whether it's guiding, fishing, rafting, skiing. For me, I just really love, you know, being, you know, on the mountains or on the rivers. And I just like showing people a good time, whether it's, you know, something they've never really tried before, or else, you know, taking fishing or taking down some ski runs that are new for them. And it's just kind of who I am, and you know, I'm a mountain person, and I enjoy it. A lot of times we have repeat clients that come up and ski, and I'll ski with them, and oftentimes I'll meet new guests. So it's just, you know, a lot of times all of our guides are with us. You know, they're all certified in snow science and snow safety, and you know, other wilderness medical training is very important out there, because we're in the wilderness and you're not like in a city or near a hospital. So there's a certain amount of risk involved out there. It's a little bit dangerous sometimes, but it's super. I mean, we have a great track record. We're really safe. But I love it. Every year, you know, we meet new people that come up to the lodge. And oftentimes, I'll ski with people here in Jackson and tell them about Alaska, and then I'll meet people in Alaska and tell them about Jackson. So it's this nice circle of outdoor sports that we share with people.
So you're an ambassador for Jackson Hole Mountain Resort. You own Torridula Mountain Lodge. What other brands are helping support you in your skiing these days?
You know, I've been with Spyder Ski Clothing since 1994, so almost 24 years now. They're a great outdoor company, mostly ski specific. So they're really into, like, you know, specialty ski brands. They have like racing suits and high end ski wear, and then they have this other line that's White Spyder, which is more almost like, you know, Patagonia, let's say, or just more kind of layering pieces, insulated down jackets and shells. And I've been with Spyder forever, and great company. They treat me really good. And then I work with Venustar, Lane, Seaboot, and Lift Bindings. And they're with Rosinal Group. So it's Rosinal Venustar. They're based down in Utah. And I work with them quite a bit. And And then I'm at the resort, you know, doing the alpine guiding and ski school, which is a great setup. But for me, I have a bunch of different hats I wear. You know, when it comes down to it, I fill in the blanks in the winter also with skiing, sometimes with corporate groups. They'll hire like Olympians to come down to Deer Valley and ski with them. And it's a great chance for me to catch up with some of the other athletes I used to ski with. Sometimes I'm with Phil Mayer. Sometimes I'm with Shannon Barkay. She's like the Olympic mogul skier. Those are really fun. But most of the time now, I just really enjoy being in Jackson because it's so great to like sleep in your own bed and wake up in the morning and, you know, look out the window and see the mountains and kind of know what the snow is going to be like and who you're going to ski with. And oftentimes in the winter, I'll go up to the mountain at, I have to be there at 8 for the guide meeting. So it's great to be out there at 8, kind of go over the snow, what the snow is going to be like that day. And then get on the tram at like 8:30 and we're at the top at 9 right when it opens. So it's a good setup. That's kind of my favorite just because it's right here and then I can go back home with my family. And when I'm in Alaska, it's a little bit tricky because I'm away from my kids and my wife, but they kind of knew that was my profession. And when I'm home and we make the most of it.
What kind of advice would you offer to somebody that's looking to get into backcountry skiing or splitboarding?
I'd say the biggest thing right now is backcountry skiing is really taken off, and you know, you see it in all the magazines and all the movies. And the best advice I can give is to take an avalanche course. I think a lot of times, you know, kids see the movies and they think it's just kind of like La La Land out there. It's nice to have a mentor too, somebody that can kind of teach you how to use a shovel, how to use a probe, how to use a transceiver. Those are the three pieces of your kit that you really need to know how to use, especially the transceiver, because a lot of times people have them and they don't really train with them. And it's pretty easy if you have a friend to say, go out and bury this in the yard underneath some snow. I'm going to get my shovel and my transceiver and go see if I can find it. So I think those are some of the big issues, or at least pieces of equipment that are super important. And then also, when you're in a certain area, like the Bridger Teton Avalanche Forecast Center is a super nice tool, just because it gives certain ratings on the snow stability, like if it's a low hazard, moderate, or dangerous, high avalanche activity. So, the snow science aspect is kind of tricky. It's hard to learn. It's hard to dig, a snow pit and know exactly what's going on. It's taken me a long time just to figure it out for myself, and I'm still learning because it's inexact science. Snow is always changing, but I think for a lot of people out there now, it's just important you need to know who you're going with in the morning. If you're going to go in the backcountry, have a plan. Make sure you got your gear figured out, and don't go with too big a group, because oftentimes the magic number for like backcountry skiing is like 2 or 3 people. Sometimes you get groups 5, 6, 7, and 8, and that's when there's a lot more danger because there's more people on the slope. And here in Jackson, there's a bunch of different avenues you can pursue, whether it's with American Avalanche Institute. They have a level 1 avalanche courses that they teach. And then there's just a lot of other avenues that you can learn, here in the community about snow safety and backcountry, whether it's Backcountry Zero, Search and Rescue. They offer some classes. So it's really important for people to understand the risks and dangers.
Do you feel the industry is promoting the message of backcountry safety as well as it could be?
I heard a stat lately that there's been a lot less avalanche fatalities lately as there was 20 years ago. So I think the word's out there for sure. And it seems like with just some of the public service announcements that are out there, with Backcountry Zero, and then also with the avalanche reports, and then just certain people, kind of just giving people a little better idea of backcountry skiing, backcountry touring, snowboarding, hiking, Teton Pass, Teton Village, backcountry. There's just a lot of ways for people to learn before they go out in the mountains, which is good because, you know, I grew up skiing in Montana and then I moved to Alaska, and I was pretty much self-taught. And then also I had some mentors that kind of showed me certain things in the mountains. So that's really important, is to have mentors and just try to brush up on your backcountry skills before you go out there.
Last but not least, if somebody wanted to come up and ski with you guys up at Tordillo, what kind of experience level does somebody need to have to become a backcountry skier or snowboarder? Actually, not even backcountry, but to come helicopter-assisted skiing.
You know, we have a pretty mix of terrain. We ski a lot with experts, of course, but, you know, if you're a strong intermediate, there's terrain for you. It's not like a lot of times people think that Alaska's, you know, they see it in the movies and they think it's just like the double black diamonds and, you know, super steep spine lines, and that's not the case. We have terrain. You know, when we ski with groups up there, and the same here in Jackson, a lot of times there's a little bit of terrain progression. You kind of start out, you know, in kind of intermediate blue runs, and then you can kind of step it up to some steeper black, you know, steeper sustained runs. So there's a little bit for everybody up there, and we're not out there to scare you out of your boots the first, you know, the first time you go out. So there's other places in Alaska, like Valdez is pretty famous for the big, steep, you know, continuous vertical at Haines, and we just try to, you know, share our range with people and show them the best time of their life.
Well, thanks, Tommy. I appreciate you being on the podcast. For more information, check out TordilloMountainLodge.com. Well, that was pretty darn sweet to be able to chat with Tommy Moe. Apologies to everybody for the audio. We, as we're growing with the podcast, we're doing some of these in person, some of these on the phone. No excuses. I will definitely tighten up the game, but that was just such an honor. I remember as a kid, I grew up skiing, and, you know, when the Olympics came on, especially the Winter Olympics, that was growing up at the beach, for myself, you know, I loved it. And I used to sit there with my mom and watch all the Winter Olympics, everything, you know, the downhill, the everything, ice skating, you name it. I love snow and I love winter. And, obviously that was probably forecoming of what was to come, but, you know, to have somebody, that won the Olympic gold, I mean, he at the time, I think he was skiing against like Hermann Mayer and all these just really big names in the German, Austrian, Swiss, and all of a sudden here comes an American, somebody from the United States, and just absolutely crushes it. He ended up winning, it was by like 1/100th of a second. It was the amount of time it takes to blink your eye. That was how much of a margin he had. So super stoked. Tommy's here. He has this company up in Alaska. He's guiding here in Jackson. Dude is just living an ultimate life. So kudos to Tommy. Okay, let's talk about some more gear. I've been fortunate lately to be riding some Burton stuff. I'm using the Burton AK jacket. This is a Gore-Tex Pro jacket. Obviously, if you're like Cody up in Mount Baker, you need that Gore-Tex. But for me, touring here, it's been great. It keeps me nice and dry. It's actually surprisingly breathable. It's super bomber. It's got really, really tough looking construction, thick zippers, reinforced cuffs, just a burly looking jacket. And, you know, it's pretty cool. The Burton AK series has always been one of the go-tos. And for somebody that's going to be backcountry snowboarding, I highly recommend this jacket. I'll have a full review of that up in the next couple days. What else? Never Summer. Oh man. Never Summer has this series that came out this year called the Shaper series, and it's absolutely incredible. The best board that I have ever ridden in my life is a board called the Never Summer Maverick. I grew up surfing, and so this board's just incredible. So what makes this board special is it's just has this incredible surf shape. It's got a big nose, it's got the tapered design, and then it has a really short tail. And with this really short tail, it's a normal size board, but with this short tail, it's just really easy to like wiggle and move around. And the board just has so much surfability. It's just so much fun. So kudos to Never Summer. They're killing it. They have the Instigator in that series, the Big Gun, and I think there's also a new one this year called the Shaper Twin. Yeah, we'll be on that pretty soon. Also testing out some bindings. Now I'm on the Brigade bindings. if you don't know about Now Bindings, you really should. I mean, they make snowboarding a lot more like skateboarding and a whole lot like more surfing, if that made sense. Anyway, now they have a kingpin in the middle of the binding, and it just allows you to really float and pump and generate speed and just move the board binding boot interface in ways that would not really be possible otherwise. So Now is killing it. Super stoked for those guys. What else? Gear. I'm looking around the office to see if there's anything we've been testing lately. You know, that's we're gonna end it with that. So that's this week's podcast. Thanks everybody for tuning in. I'll be back next week. I will actually be broadcasting next week from Southern California. I'll go sit somewhere on a beach and hopefully be getting some good surf in. All right. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. This is episode number 21. Wow. Everything, snowboarding and more. Mike Hardiker tuning out. Peace.